After the No Kings protest on Saturday, demonstrators gathered outside the ICE facility in South Portland. ICE officers were aggressive towards the festive crowd, shooting tear gas, flashbangs, and pepper balls indiscriminately, including at people who were running away. KBOO's Anna Wilcox reports.
A group of a few hundred people gathered outside the McAdam ICE facility in Portland following Saturday's peaceful No Kings protest. The festive atmosphere of the daytime protest continued here, in front of the building. Loud music played from speakers across the street. People in costumes danced and shouted remarks at the officers standing on the roof. Medic and supply stations line one side of South Bancroft Street, near the building. The air smells like a mix of tear gas and barbecue. While KBOO was on the scene, two small groups of right-wing protesters gathered on either side of South Bancroft Street, on the edges of the protest. After 7 in the evening, officers began assembling behind the driveway gate of the building. Protesters began warning each other that guards were coming out.
Right now, it looks like some of the officers are lining up behind the gate to the ICE facility, which is something that's pretty common when they want to move cars in and out of the facility.
The officers fired flashbangs toward the back of the crowd. They sounded like fireworks and made red sparks. Officers used pepper balls to move protesters out of the area of the driveway. They also used gas canisters to clear the road while a vehicle exited the building. Clouds of gas filled the area in front of the building. It became impossible to see the building in the areas where gas was present. The gas made it difficult to breathe and stung any place it made contact with the skin. KBOO witnessed a red flashbang fired into the tear-gassed street, nearly hitting a protester in an inflatable pig costume. You could hear the sounds of a Black Hawk helicopter circling overhead. Portland Mercury reports that the gas deployment lasted for about 10 minutes. As the officers retreated back into the building, protesters in masks and goggles tried to pour water on the gas canisters. Some kicked the canisters back toward the building. Used gas canisters littered the street and the driveway to the ICE facility. KBOO talked with a veteran who was hit with a pepper ball during the event. He had a centimeter-wide round bruise on his forearm.
What happened just now?
I was standing across the street. I was past even the sidewalk. I was underneath the canopy that's got the speakers in it. And they came out because they were opening up the gate to let out a vehicle. And they let off just a barrage of stuff to clear the roads.
That was cute.
And then as they were starting to go back in, they just launched like World War III in the middle of the street. There wasn't anybody in there, but it was just nothing. And they were just firing pepper balls all around the crowd. And I took a couple hits. Yes.
Would you feel comfortable sharing your thoughts about what drove you to be out here today?
This is not the country that I gave 9 years of my life in service for, and I'm out here to show that I completely disagree with this. It makes me sick to my stomach what they're turning my country into, and this is not what I fought for.
As the gas dissipated from the street, protesters went back to dancing. For KBOO Portland, I'm Anna Wilcox.
On October 20th, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals put on hold a lower court ruling that kept President Trump from taking command of 200 Oregon National Guard troops. The Trump administration has said the troops are needed to protect federal property from protesters, and that having to send extra Department of Homeland Security agents to help guard the property meant they were not enforcing immigration laws elsewhere. Well, Mike, let's talk about how these cases with deployment of the National Guard are working their way through the various levels of federal and state courts and how to make sense of the dizzying array of seemingly contradictory opinions issued.
Well, the Ninth Circuit did place on hold what the district court judge did, but it's a very interesting opinion because you get the whole array of judicial responses to what's going on in this country. There is the official ruling that reverses the district court. The district court found there was no proof at all that the present government could not enforce the law. There's no need at all. And the concurring opinion is a fervent Trumpista who said basically the president does not even need to be reviewed by the courts, that he or she can do whatever the president wants to do. There is a vigorous dissent by Judge Susan Graber, who systematically goes through all the factual evidence in this case, shows that there was no way that the law that cited by the majority was not complied with, and concludes by saying, after the court asked for a hearing by all the court, a huge majority, an en banc decision, or a review of what three judges have done, she wrote, "I urge my colleagues on this court to act swiftly to vacate the majority's order before the illegal deployment of troops under false pretenses can occur. Above all, I ask those who are watching this case unfold to retain faith in our judicial system for just a little longer."
Wow. So those are sobering words, and we're certainly responding to them. Mike, there seem to be two laws that the Trump administration is citing, the Posse Comitatus Act and the Insurrection Act. Can you explain how those very old laws are cited and how capacious they are, as sometimes lawyers use that term, how capacious the laws are?
Well, the Posse Comitatus Act was passed in 1878. It has ignominious beginnings, but it's really important. It was passed originally by Southerners who wanted to be able to do whatever they wanted to do in their own states without federal interference. And what it holds is that the federal government cannot be employed, nor military troops can't be employed to do normal law enforcement activities. Now, states' rights was big in the South back when the federal government was lurking over them. But now that they control the federal government, they've lost all interest in states' rights.
Was that also true during the 50s and 60s and the confrontation over federal troops in the South, over desegregation? Was this Posse Comitatus Act cited then?
Of course, yeah. They wanted to, because when Eisenhower called in federal troops, National Guards, they stoutly resisted and cited to this law. So this is the law that would keep the National Guard from patrolling the streets of Portland. But there is
so that's
also
a good law to cite for those who are pushing back.
Yeah, but the law relied on by the majority opinion and by the Trumpistas is the Insurrection Act of 1792. And that
even older.
It's a very old act. It's now 10 U.S.C., United States Code, Section 12406.
Can you say that once more, Mike?
Okay, it's 10 U.S. Code, Section 12406.
Okay, got it.
So that holds to begin with, the U.S., whenever the U.S. is invaded or in danger of invasion by a foreign nation, or there is a rebellion or danger of rebellion against the authority of the government of the United States, or, and here's the clause that's in play, the president is unable with regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. The president may then call into federal service members and units of the National Guard of any state. So that clause three is the one relied on by Trump.
You know, when I read the opinion that summarizes the case of the Trump administration, there were like pages and pages of incidents from June through September at the ICE facility in Portland. And it puts together a seemingly reasonable legal argument that these protests were threats to ICE officers and the facility itself. How did you read that list of incidents that was pages and pages of them?
Well, the dissent points out that it's a rhetorical trick, that the law requires that the president be presently unable. Unable to enforce the laws means something that has to be right now.
And oh, that, not that things happened in June or that.
That in June 5th, someone threw an object at an ICE member has very little relevance to what's going on in late September. And she shows, she in turn quoted day after day's notes from the people who were there observing and trying to enforce the laws, saying that nothing's happening, people are sitting around, walking around. There was never any real violence to speak of. There was nothing remotely dangerous to the degree that law enforcement was helpless. They required that they required any sort of assistance, that they were, quote, unable to enforce the laws. And the other evidence presented by the government, other than a parade of horribles stretched out over 3 months and boiled down into 2 pages, was the fact that it was expensive and inconvenient. But that's, as the dissent pointed out, not the same thing as being presently unable to force the law. The fact that something is inconvenient is not a justification for allowing army troops to patrol the streets of Portland.
Now, the sanctuary city and sanctuary state policies are really in the crosshairs of the Trump administration. And in the opinion I read, it was cited as part of the inability of ICE agents working with, they were not able to enlist the police to assist them in controlling incidents at the ICE facilities. How do you see the sanctuary policies, which are in force in this city and state, to be drawn into this and the legal arguments they make?
Well, it's really irrelevant. I mean, they want to slam the sanctuary movement, but they don't show how that in any way interferes with the ability of law enforcement to enforce the laws. And that's the only question that Section 12406 is interested in. And the fact that Portland is a sanctuary state may limit
the city,
to the ability of Portland to cooperate with ICE, but there's no need to cooperate with ICE in order to maintain the public peace.
So do the conservatives that I guess have overtaken a dominant liberal majority in the Ninth Circuit, do they rely on just the interpretation of the Insurrection Act that gives the president of the U.S. a lot of latitude for his own subjective judgment? I mean, what is the basis of their reading of this act in favor of the Trump administration?
Well, the majority says that the president has the power to do this, that the judiciary does have the power to review it, but if the president's actions can be in any way justified, or if it's within the bounds of possible reason, they have to support it. So they basically say the standard is very forgiving for the president, and that this standard has been met. That's the present ruling. The guy who concurred argued that the president doesn't have to meet any standard at all.
Whoa. And
so there is a case that's going to be ahead of the Oregon case. California, and there's a Newsom v. Trump case that is going to be argued this month after the reviews of bench trial held in, where a federal judge ruled in August that Trump's deployment of the California National Guard in Los Angeles violated the Posse Comitatus Act. So that ruling was cited repeatedly by both the majority and dissent in the case reviewing the Portland situation.
And Mike, go ahead, finish. I wanted to also turn to the implications of these cases for the actions of protesters at ICE facilities. Do you want to finish a point there? Or?
Well, I forgot what it was.
About that this is still an important case in California.
Right, and that case will likely trump our case, to make a bad pun, in that it was a few months ahead of it. But it's very different factually, because in Los Angeles is huge. In Southern California in its entirety, it was invaded by 4,000 National Guard troops, a third of all the troops available, as compared to with 200 troops in Portland. And everyone agrees the only locus of concern in Portland is the ICE facility in the southwest part of Portland. And so it's factually very different.
So speaking of the ICE facility, on No King's Day here in Portland, protesters were tear gassed and pepper sprayed at the ICE facility. And so you have this kind of split screen of Portland ICE protests of, on the one side of the screen, playful frogs and inflated animal costumes, kind of mocking the whole specter of insurrection and mayhem in Portland. And on the other side of the screen, you do have real confrontations between ICE agents and protesters that kind of ebb and flow. What are the implications of these cases and opinions going through the courts for tactics of resistance at ICE facilities?
Well, I think the whimsical and mocking protest was aimed at Trump himself, who refers to Portland as a hellhole in general. And
Can't
he
see why
looked.
anyone could possibly live here.
I know. But of course, that's very different than what's going on where ICE lives and where its office is. And those protests will, what you described shows that there is no problem with law enforcement right now. Law enforcement can enforce the law, it can even abuse the laws. There's plenty of muscle, plenty of personnel right now without any National Guard troops. There's absolutely no need, there's no present inability to enforce the law that is required by the federal law cited by Trump. So the reach of the First Amendment is always in dispute. It always will be. There will be abuses. There will be excesses. But that's part of expression. That's part of knowing and measuring accurately what people feel and how strongly do they feel it, in what ways do they feel it, in what ways are they moved to action. That's part of this country's fundamental way of presenting and resolving disputes.
So,
And there
Mike,
will be.
I wanted to ask you about the case that is put together in opposition to the Trumpistas, as you call them, that these are just a handful of people in lawn chairs and a lot of old people who are quite benign. And is there a risk of accepting that premise that we're only able to defend ourselves if we're small and helpless and benign and don't engage in confrontational tactics? Is there a risk in accepting that premise?
No, because this is a review of the actual facts on the ground in Portland. That's what the law requires. Are the authorities presently unable to the law? And all of that, those facts that you just described, are the real facts on the ground and have been for months for the most part. So the fact that they were noted by the dissent is entirely relevant to this particular case. Every case will be resolved on its own facts. The Los Angeles case is a very different case, but the facts cited here by the dissent that you just cited are in reality what's going on, and that controls what legal responses are allowed.
So, as the Trump administration continues with its reactionary, aggressive, fascistic moves and use of ICE agents, and the protests gather in momentum, what are the legal issues there that may differ from what's been happening in recent months?
I think the Judge Graber is optimistic that the Ninth Circuit, in its larger version, will ban the present efforts. But I'm concerned that the U.S. Supreme Court, which will eventually resolve this question of how far does the president's reach extend, it'll have cases from Chicago, from California, and from Oregon. They'll all be a little bit different. They will be resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm afraid that what that court will do will be to reserve to the judiciary a sort of formal degree of power, but it will find what the president does to be well within the reach of his discretion and that he can basically do what he wants to do. At that point, we will have a government which, unlike the 60s, which in many ways were more violent, is not isolated to hippies and black people. But he's demonizing all Democrats. His press secretary says they're all agents of Hamas. They're all, so in my mind, that makes the upcoming election supremely important. First, to make sure that it actually happens, and then to make sure that the process is properly followed. I think if so, that Trump has alienated enough of his own base with his lurches, economically speaking, with tariffs from 200% to 12%, with his deals made to benefit people who hold Argentinian bonds by giving billions of dollars to Argentina, which at the same time Argentina is selling all of its soybeans and beef to China and are depriving the U.S. of many markets to which ranchers and farmers have long since been accustomed to selling into. But there's enough problems emerging that if we have a fair election, I think Trump will be gone in terms of the House of Representatives. That will be enough anyway, because they do create the budgets. So it's a remarkably strong, bitter battle going on now between not just a silent majority and extreme hippies and black people, but between one huge group of people and another huge group of people in this country.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Mike, for that little tutorial on the law, very old laws that get resurrected, and on both sides of this struggle. And we'll continue to follow these court cases, and we'll keep the words of Judge Susan Graber in mind as we continue to look to the law as a very complicated process, but we still need to turn to the law where we can.
I think so. And I will answer Judge Graber's statement, that request or appeal, that those of us who are watching this case unfold retain faith in our judicial system for just a little longer. I will do that for just a little longer.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. We'll see you next month.
Okay.